Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Otherworld Radio with Sandra Sabatini, Michael Lee Hill, Karen C. Patrick, and Charlotte Rose Hanley.
On this 8th day of March, I am Sandra Sabatini, your host and moderator for tonight's special live radio show broadcast event. On behalf of the team at OWRN, we want to send abundant gratitude and appreciation to all of you, our listeners around the world, for tuning in to this fantastic show. Joining us will be Dr. A.R. Borden, scientist, biophysicist, working for an undisclosed institute of basic and applied research in Los Angeles. He is currently the interim director of an undisclosed scientific group and does private research in extended human functions, development of skunk work technology, and interface with extraterrestrials and other anomalies. Also joining us tonight in this revelatory conversation is Mr. Michael Lee Hill, UFO researcher, Anunnaki contactee, musician, recording artist, who has been featured on the History Channels 1 and 2, UFO Hunters, Fox News, and CBS. This will be a closed interview tonight, meaning that we will not be taking call-in questions tonight or chat room blasts. But we can guarantee you this interview tonight will be absolutely stunning. So hold on tight. We have no idea where this is going to go. Coming right back, you're listening to Otherworld Radio.
Did you know that most of the authors appearing on Otherworld Radio have their books featured right on our Otherworld Radio store page? After the show tonight, go over to www.otherworldradio.com/store.htm and check out the Our Pick Selection Carousel and pick up a featured book today. And don't forget to visit the Otherworld Radio store, located also on that webpage. All purchases made through our store goes toward keeping Otherworld Radio on the air. We thank you in advance for your support.
I would like, if I may, to take you on a strange journey.
Welcome to Otherworld Radio with Sandra D. Sabatini and Michael Lee Hill.
And welcome back to Otherworld Radio. Joining us tonight is Dr. A.R. Borden, scientist, biophysicist, working for an undisclosed institute of basic and applied research in Los Angeles, California. Also joining us tonight is Michael Lee Hill, UFO researcher, Anunnaki contactee, musician, recording artist extraordinaire. Tonight's topic is going to be an introduction interview with Mr. Dr. Borden. It's meant to educate, disseminate to the public in a responsible way many subjects in regards to the Anunnaki and other facts that have never been disclosed to the public before. So right now what I'd like to do is open the floor to Mr. Michael E. Hill and Dr. A.R. Borden. Gentlemen, it's playtime.
How you doing, Sandra?
I am doing fabulous. Hey there.
Wow, it's so great to have you on the radio like this and for you to take your time. And I'm so excited for people to learn what you have to share with us tonight.
Well, I don't know about that, Michael. I think you've got a lot to share as well. This is between you and I now.
Well, let me tell you, A.R., years ago, when I started having some very strange occurrences happen in my life, the person that came and was able to add their guidance and help me process what was happening was you. And this was 2008, and I can get into that why that was, but just let me tell you, for 4 years, I've had all kinds of people asking me, like, if you even really exist, and I'm just making all this up in my head and all this and whatnot. So it's cool, like, unless I'm a great ventriloquist, you know, you really do exist.
Yeah, I do. Yeah,
but,
I do.
Let me take this back, because around 2005 here, I started noticing these huge orbs of light out over Lake Erie. Mm-hmm. And so I started going down and filming them, and pretty soon they let me know that they knew I was filming them. And they would come closer and just allow me to film them, really. So my footage ended up going viral, and my YouTube page now has about 3.5 million views for people checking out this footage. So that landed me on the History Channel show, and during this, they had interviewed this other gentleman named Terrell Copeland, and Terrell, unbeknownst to me, he had filmed the same UFOs I had. He had the same story of contact, same spiritual message given to him actually as well, which is the whole become conscious of what you're thinking, you know, because thoughts create our reality. But the strange thing was that Terrell was dismissed from the military because he had an unknown blood anomaly. So the History Channel thought, wouldn't it be strange, because he and I had all these similar experiences, if somehow I ended up with that same unknown blood anomaly. So unbeknownst to me, because I wouldn't have did it, to tell you the truth, because I don't like needles, but I just thought I was going to do a follow-up for them. They flew me and Terrell to Boston and had our blood work, and that's when it was released that we don't have normal human blood. And at this point, I had no idea what any of this was about, you know. But the strange thing is during this, and you and I was just talking about this, AR, and I find it still fascinating to this day that Bill Burns, legendary UFO researcher, he owns UFO Magazine, he's a host on, you know, History Channel and whatnot, he told me back then that I would be meeting some people from the inside that would be able to help me process what was happening to me. And it wasn't long after that show, you and I came in contact. And to me, you are that person. He never mentioned you by name. I'll just say that now. But I think the facts fit pretty well. I often think, how did Bill know what he knew, you know? But
he's cognitive.
I would have to think so.
Yeah, I would say that, yes.
Yeah, he's a very intelligent guy. And so, a matter of fact, let me just say, Bill Burns, he's a New York Times bestselling author. He co-wrote The Day After Roswell with Philip Corso. He's releasing a new book called UFO Hunters Season 1, The Book.
Yeah,
I'm really excited because one of those chapters is now going to be featuring me and my story here. And so I'm doing Bill's radio show tomorrow, which is Future Theater. So there's a lot of cool stuff happening here. But when you and I met, there's nowhere else that I was getting the kind of information that I was getting from you. And, you know, I had promised that I wouldn't spread this stuff, so I sat on it, you know, and I hope I did the right thing. But I felt so fortunate to be coming into the information that I was getting from you that I'm just really excited for you to be here tonight and now share it with the world.
What I was trying to do back then, Michael, was to put up a framework, a way of looking at what you were experiencing and what you had in your blood. And that simply stated is that these markers that are odd, to say the very least, were things that made it possible for you to be able to tune in, to be able to extend your awareness, extend your vector intention, and connect. I mean, not very many people can do that at will. And those that can do and are noticed. So you were noticed.
Interesting. That's how this all ties in with the Anunnaki subject, because, you know, soon, right after the History Channel and them revealing the blood anomaly, and then me coming into contact with you, if you remember, I went to this festival in the fall of 2008, and I was confronted by these beings who announced themselves to me as the Anunnaki. If you remember, at that time, there was no Ancient Aliens on TV. I had never read a Zachariah Sitchin book. I didn't know what an Anunnaki even was. And the first thing I did is I came back and I emailed you, and I said, do you know anything about the Anunnaki? It's kind of funny and ironic now, you know.
Yeah. I remember that.
Yeah. Then, you know what really helped me is at that point, and I think a lot of people are this part of their knowledge of the Anunnaki. I didn't know. I thought all Anunnaki was one race. And even though they are, there's different factions within the Anunnaki who perhaps have different agendas. And I didn't know that. And it was because of, you know, coming into your wisdom that I started to realize that there was different agendas happening within that umbrella, you know?
Yes, Michael, and those agendas continue.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't get to talk about that here tonight.
Indeed. But as far as my story, you know what? That's pretty much it. I want to get into your life, AR, and I know you're an Anunnaki contactee as well, from your childhood. And
yes.
That led to contact. Could you tell us about that?
Yeah, sure. Well, it started back in 1956, I think. 56 or, yeah. About January, February, my dad and I were on a fishing trip on the Paraná River in between Paraguay and Argentina, close to where the Iguazu Falls were. And we were traveling, or we were motoring back to towards a place called Encarnacion, where my uncle at that time lived, and we were visiting him. At any rate, late afternoon, I'd say about 5-6 o'clock, and here comes this light. And me being a curious little kid, jumping up and down on the boat and trying to get their attention. Sure enough, got their attention all right, and they started lowering and coming at us. My dad just about had a heart attack.
I can imagine.
And one thing led to another. Pretty soon they were right on top of us. He didn't remember anything afterwards, but I did. We were lifted, quite literally lifted up to this vessel, and we were there probably for about 45-50 minutes, but less than an hour.
Wow.
At the time is when I first met the gentleman that I would meet again in 1981 on the west coast of Florida, and he's in retrospect, I knew who he was, having met him before on the river. But the other fellow that was there with him in Florida was new to me. I have since met and talked with him several times, and he is now here as a formal representative.
Wow, that's amazing.
So we got to know each other somewhat. Relating to someone from another world, and not having the benefit of having been raised within the way of life of theirs, one is somewhat handicapped. And yet, they made the effort. They let me know them and of them. So it became easier. So a comfort zone developed, and we were able to begin to talk meaningfully, discuss things, and talk about the future. Of course, the future was centered with them about the proximity of the incoming, the proximity of their home planet.
Well, it's Nibiru, correct?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So over time, the 56 and 87 and 8 and 81 events were not the only ones. And what really turned things around for me was in 1987, being in an accident and being, dead for 2 hours, clinically dead for 2 hours. During that period of time, being where I was, it was timeless. It was an extraordinary situation and an extraordinary experience. And one of the things that I asked during this event was to understand what was going on and what was going to happen. And so, I not only got an earful, it doesn't do justice for what I got.
I can imagine.
Let's call it a humongous download that has taken me years, decades, to make sense of, to decipher. And I'm still gaining understanding and deciphering what I got then.
I totally understand. It definitely seems to be a work in progress. There's all just multiple levels of understanding.
Oh, yeah. Most definitely.
But you know what I find fascinating in my own research right now is how everything comes down to very specific geometry that everything's created from, whether it's an atom up to universes or our cells in our body and you know what I mean? To me, it's starting to show the blueprint of a creator, which is very fascinating to me because not long ago I was agnostic.
What happened to you?
What's that?
What happened to you?
That's a whole other story. After I met the Anunnaki, that was in the summer of 2008. In the fall of 2008, I went through what I can only call, I guess some people call it the dark night of the soul. And you and I talked about this at this time. It was, it about killed me. You know, I guess really at some point when someone higher deems someone worthy of being, you're tested to see if you're a clean vessel, you know, and all your dark baggage comes out and is manifest in your waking reality, and it's sink or swim time, you know. You either control it or you don't. And after 4 days of it, I learned to control it, and I chose properly, and here I am. So that's what started to open up this almost learning cosmic laws of how light truly slows down its physical rate and becomes physical, and we experience it as this physical reality. But truly, like quantum physicists are telling us, that consciousness is what's behind that. So, you know, we really need to start becoming cognizant of what we allow in our own belief systems and start choosing higher, because, you know, we've been taught it doesn't matter when in truth it's the only thing that matters.
Oh, yes, it does. Oh, you bet. Consider a thought somewhat more or less of a bullet. It does have a vector, and it does have power behind it. Now, albeit not, it's not the same thing as, say, the force that the bullet would have when shot. But nonetheless, it does have impact on where this thought is directed at.
Yeah, indeed.
So, oh, yeah.
That's a great way of putting it as well, that, you know, thoughts have energy. There's an electromagnetic reality, and I know that some of your people that you work with are coming out with technology where you can actually see the human subtle fields in real time. And I think that's amazing that that technology is going to be released to the public here soon.
It already is.
That's fantastic.
Check out the work of the biofield people.
Mm-hmm.
Thornton Streeter, for one, is one of the better known guys on the net about this.
Yeah, indeed. I'm looking forward to meeting Thornton. We met via friends, but I've not talked to him personally yet. But he seems like a really great guy.
Mm-hmm. He is. Yes.
Yeah, but getting back to how thoughts create reality and have an electromagnetic reality to them, everyone knows that, you know, energy can't be created or destroyed. So no one really, it doesn't seem like, has asked the question, how do you transmute a negative thought form then? I believe you live it. It comes up in your reality for you to have another chance to choose love over fear, and it transmutes that waveform into its higher octave. You know, the only way to do it is for you to do it. No one can do it for you, you know?
Well, I understand what you're trying to say, but I'm going to put a little different slant on that.
Cool.
Using positive, negative as descriptors for emotions, for thoughts, it's a little too constraining. Because that implies a choice between good and not good. Well, in the universe, in the quantum universe, there is only determinism. It's the way it is, and this applies to what the quantum world realm does to support how things are in space-time. Every object then becomes it supported energy, this field, which can be homogeneous or not homogeneous. And so this is also another way of talking about dark energy, but dark in terms of non-light reflective.
Interesting.
Okay. And so when enters a COBE, a complex oscillating biological entity, a human being, and this human being has thoughts, has desires, has attitudes, that's everything that a human being experiences and gains through experience in the world. So this individual has a thought about a woman, about a child, about a condition in government, a condition in a particular country, a concern about whatever it is. Those are vectors for his thoughts. And whatever spin that person puts on the thought, is what determines whether or not it is positive to the resolution or the change of the condition, so that of that event, that situation, that it makes then possible for a change to occur that resolves, opens up, otherwise just makes things clearer for himself, herself, for anyone else. So you can't really say that did he do something positive or did he do something negative. That depends on the observer, who is looking at what he did.
Yeah, understood. That's a great point. And it kind of makes sense with Dr. Emoto's work, where he's showing, you know, that water on a molecular level will take
Correct.
On, like, thought forms. And obviously,
yes.
The water doesn't understand what you're writing as far as I love you or, you know, I want to kill you or whatever. That it doesn't understand fear and love in those contexts. So Dr. Emoto said, what is it? And he said, really, it's whether you're harmonious with nature or against it.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
I so that's beautiful. That's a great way of looking at it. It's
and
a deep subject, you know.
What it does, Michael, is it will assist us in understanding how things really work. Because we tend to say, okay, it's something is good, something is bad, and run with it according to the preferences, attitudes, and values we have. Whereas it may not necessarily be either positive or negative. It just, something just is. It's the observer then that adds the condition, with his or her perception.
Yeah, understood. Yeah.
And communicate that value or that conclusion about that event as being positive or negative. So a lot of things come back to the observer, to you and I, looking at and experiencing things in the world. Does that make any sense?
Absolutely, it does. I think that's where we are as a race right now, of learning these things and starting to make better decisions for all of us. You know, and we need to understand how powerful we truly are when we come together with shared intention, you know.
Yeah.
It won't take many of us to change this world for the better, and it's already happening.
Correct.
So we're doing it right now, and you're doing it by being here, and so thank you.
Hey, thank you. Where would you like to go in our conversation?
What I thought was really fascinating that we were talking about, AR, Sandra, we've spoken about this a lot as well, that, you know, there's been a lot of talk now of the Anunnaki. We've had a lot of guests that are really great experts on the Anunnaki, but everything's in the past. It's like 2,000 years ago, you know. I would like to bring the Anunnaki subject forward into the future and our present as much as possible that time allows. And I know AR has some great information along this timeline that has never been heard by the public before. And so more than anything, I would like to get into the timeline of bringing the Anunnaki subject into our current situation and how it relates to what we're experiencing right now.
Okay.
Sound
First of
good?
All, let me ask you what experiences are you looking at that we're experiencing?
Well, I think one big thing is a lot of people in the mass consciousness, I think, first of all, just view all extraterrestrials as grays. It's just, they don't even understand that there's more than one race.
Oh,
but
yeah.
Then you get the whole why are abductions happening, and why are they happening at the rate? And, you know, a lot of people feel that the Anunnaki are behind those, and I don't feel that that's accurate. And I think even in our historic record, it's in there that the Anunnaki came and wanted to help us through these phases back in the 50s, but they wouldn't allow us to use our nuclear energy programs, because pretty much they said, you have no idea what you're messing with. And you know what? They were right, you know. But I would like to take it from there and, you know, why it was allowed that the Greys could abduct us, you know, and look into and all that, you know. I think that's what needs to be talked about right now in the UFO community.
Okay. Well, let me say something that may or may not be controversial. And I'm going to switch to the name I have for them, Sam, or Sha'ami. And I'm going to say this. They are significant to us, and they're significant to our history, our race, our consciousness. They are actually, in the overall, the least of our problems.
Indeed, yeah. Just one little facet in a much bigger picture. But.
Yes, saying that because they are part of a larger picture. And this larger picture is something that we need to become cognizant. We need to become aware, and we have to deal with it. And deal with it not in terms of prejudices, but of what is, what is actually really happening. And for people, for our brothers and sisters here on Earth, you know, we need to understand, and they need to understand, that there is valid sources of information on the net, but you have to know where to look for them. And you need to do your due diligence in finding out these sources. Some, strangely enough, are from government. Some are not. Some are from other, if not governmental units, official or semi-official units. And they're spread all over the world. England, Brazil, Australia, South Africa, Russia, you name it. There are sources. And we can go and get information, but again, for everything that you get, there are pearls in there, and there's a lot of garbage. And one needs to discern. One needs to develop a detecting method, develop a detecting sense. Yes, this feels right and correct. Not true. Right and correct. Because what you're trying to do is you're trying to formulate a picture. You're trying to develop a model that is ever constantly changing and will continue to change. So if one is expecting to have a model that is static and this is the way it is, sorry, doesn't work that way.
Yeah, right on.
And why doesn't it work this way? Because we are in the middle of an exopolitical situation that changes sometimes even daily. And at the bottom of it all, for the lack of a better word, are the imperatives that are on the playing field. These imperatives are what these groups must have, what is really important to them, in, not only in terms of us, but also in terms of the other players on board. And there are more than 10. There are more than 20. Are you getting the picture? Because it's not just one, it's not just two, it's Gray, it's not just Anunnaki or Sam or...
Yeah, I think we need to come to the grips that the universe is teeming with life, and probably a lot of intelligent, cognizant life forms that have evolved throughout the eons, you know, I would have to think that there's many intelligent races. Oh. I'm just excited to meet them.
Read George Lobuano's books. He's very descriptive and very well written, by the way.
What was the book's name?
George Lobuano. He wrote an alien primer, and he's got another new book out. You can find them on the net.
All right, great. I'll look into that.
You bet. Anyway.
As you were saying, though, Sam, even though there's a lot bigger playing field with a lot more players in human history, it seems that we'll call him the Sam from now on, but just so people know, that is the Anunnaki we're talking about. They've been known under many names, but that is actually what they call themselves, correct?
Correct.
Good. So that should be what we call them, I would think, then. They've been intertwined in our own human history for a very long time, more so than in any of the other races, from what I understand. Even though there's other races involved, they're not involved into the level that they are. So even with them contacting our government in the past, and, you know, I think that's fascinating things that are coming out. Like Bob Dean just released that in, you know, the Mirok field meeting with the Anunnaki in 1954, like you were saying.
Mm-hmm.
That's a fascinating thing that like, really no one knows right now, and I think it's I'm glad it's getting out there. Can you talk about that a little bit, when they came and tried to negotiate, you know, a peaceful...
Yeah, there were several groups that were trying to do the same thing. There is a group of them, the Sams are part of this grouping. And the reason, I guess that the overwhelming rationale was that it did not want to have the Earth, be destroyed by our own stupidity. And so these pitches, I'll simply call them pitches. These pitches were made in order to attract attention away from atomics or from fission as a source of power and energy, and also the weaponized form. So the Sams were a part of it. There were others. There were others that made contact. Orionis, Andromeda, Lyran, and Sam were four of the ones that I can think of.
Interesting.
Okay, so it wasn't just one effort. Did you mention Nick?
No. It was Bob Dean.
Okay, Bob Dean.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. Bob was talking at one of the UFO congresses outside, and he was talking about. He said that it actually, in his own words, the Anunnaki scared the shit out of our government with their technology, and pretty much just had their reality shattered. You know that.
Correct. And this is, see, our reaction here from this side was very interesting. There were people who were very afraid, and the approach to the pitch was rejection, and this seemed to prevail not only through the Joint Chiefs of Staff and the Secretary of War at that time, but it was also something that what I understand to be the Magic 12 group. Though they were split, they also realized that, yes, we are before an overwhelming force. And that this force was something, actually, the force itself was an imperative being used or being communicated to us through the terms that were being laid down for us to consider and either accept or reject. One of the things that it's key to understand, Michael, is that...
Hey, AR, can I ask you to get a little bit closer to your microphone? You're breaking up just a little bit.
Okay. One of the things that it's very important to understand in exopolitics is that even when there is an uneven power distribution in the players,
mm-hmm.
or between the players, the key to connecting is agreement. And when there isn't agreement, then there is no connection. And this holds true not just in negotiation. This holds true across the board in any kind of interaction with them.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that we are yet not very aware is that we have both conscious or things that are within our awareness that we can that we can say, yeah, I agree to this, I don't agree to this. But we also have an extended memory and information processing that is beyond our awareness, and then it becomes a semi-conscious or unconscious. And that part of us may be in agreement with whatever it is that is being proposed by this or that eating group. And in personal terms, people may seem to split, when in reality they are already in agreement that something that they want, we're going to provide. We're going to agree to it. Use this framework in understanding what happens to a lot of people who are abducted. A lot of our abductees may not necessarily have consciously willing to be abducted and to give whatever samples were being recorded on.
Yeah, they really don't ask you, do they?
Oh.
Yeah, it'd be nice if they asked.
Actually, this is a classic breakdown in communication. It's very interesting because communication is not just necessarily verbal. When somebody is terrified and fearful, there is a more organic, if I may use the word, to refer to this more elemental, this more unconscious, subconscious part of us that will be far more discerning of what is being asked and what is being communicated. And we respond to that without realizing we are communicating because it is not within our awareness. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Communication occurs regardless of whether or not someone is aware of agreeing or disagreeing with the condition or the situation that you face.
Yeah, personally, I've never had any experience that I looked at it as negative, and that even includes one time I woke up and I was being worked on, and it wasn't pleasant, but you know what? I mean, even if you had surgery and it was for your benefit, and if you wake up in the middle of it, it's not going to be pleasant. And that's just how I viewed it. I asked them, listen, I'm awake, and the being next to me said, I'm sorry, we didn't know you were aware, and he made me go unconscious again. That's the only thing that's ever been like that I would even put into a negative category. And other than that, any contact that I've had, I've gained knowledge, and it's been a wonderful thing.
It's been an experience, and it adds to your grasp and understanding of what is and what isn't. See, I guess what I have trouble with is polarizing understanding. into this, it's either this or that. It's no pun intended, but there's a lot more gray to it than...
Yeah. I think the beauty's in gray, because like you're saying, sometimes life doesn't just give you a black or white, man. It's definitely, there's always yin and yang, and they wrap themselves around each other.
Yeah. Where else did you want to go on with this?
How about even further into the treaties that were made later on? I think it's fascinating because of them pointing out the nuclear power programs and them wanting – that was the only – from my understanding, that was the only thing that they demanded, that we'll help you with technology and help you get through what's coming, but you got to get out of this nuclear weapons and technology, which in all rights they were correct. Look what we've done with Fukushima and – you know, and whatnot. But the fascinating thing is that you have all these accounts all through the 70s, 80s, and 90s of these UFOs coming down over military installations where there's nuclear weapons, and they're taking in weapons into no-go. And in nuclear tests that are going off, they're shooting them out of the sky. It's like they're constantly giving us a reminder that you really don't want to be using this stuff, you know? I think it's a fascinating subject. Let's get into that a little.
Well, I'm not exactly sure how to approach this other than to say, to give you a kind of an overview of what my experience has been of being exposed to the consequences of these things. Enforcement of these treaties were difficult at best and impossible at worst. One of the things that we still realize even today, that whatever you're going to enter into, whether it's an agreement, a general agreement, or whatever you want to call it, it is going to be broken, because we tend to think in static terms, and static is probably the best, the most correct, most accurate way of looking at the way we think versus the way they think. They think in terms of intensity, and they think topologically. In other words, all things are related to everything else. Whereas to us, it's this way or that way or the other, and the twain or the thrain you'll never meet. So it, by the way we think, we put ourselves at a disadvantage with them. And realizing this, then it behooves us then to be able to change, to learn, to expand the way we think, how we think. I'll refer you again to one of George's books that is very useful in what we're talking about right now, because in communicating with them, exchanging information with them, and becoming connected with them, is not communication as you and I are doing right now.
Oh, I know. It's very telepathic, and it comes in through your own reality, which at first really...
It's not just telepathic, Michael. It's a lot more than that. In fact, they communicate in the same way we do by communication. They communicate with every cell, every fiber of their being. And they translate that into electromagnetic rain emissions, and they that again because of their higher electrical capacitance, their cells, then they can produce a lot more energy that they can put behind a thought or an idea, not just a thought, an idea, a version of reality as they see it, they want you to get. Okay?
Yeah,
And when that happens, when that happens, you get it, and you get it whole. And you go, whoa, okay, so this is what it is. Witness, for example, one of the fellows that works with me, or used to work with me, his first contact was traumatic because to him, they were showing him who he was, who he is, and who he will be. But what they were not telling him is, these are your choices. It's like somebody raising up a mirror to you and saying, okay, look. And then one begins to project things onto the mirror. And this is what happens to him. Not understanding that this was a gentle way of recognizing, gentle from their point of view, a gentle way of recognizing who you are. Because to them, we are the past, the present, and the future.
Wow. These are things that really don't come up in conversation much, you know. What's it like to meet one of these beings? And that's fascinating.
The impact that that has on you.
Yeah.
Tremendous. And
yeah, they've made it known to me that they can communicate right through my own personal reality, you know.
Sure.
That takes a little getting used to, you know.
Actually, one of the things they're very good at doing is grasping and understanding individual realities and being able to not infiltrate, but place ideas, place means, if you will, and not necessarily in words, but in attitude, in a way of looking at something. In a way that whatever you had before changed, just because now you have a different perspective. That's probably the better word for it. It's someone having the ability to insert a different perspective on something that you have that changed you in the process. Isn't something like that that happened to you when you ran into them?
The whole telepathic stuff actually was afterwards. A lot of that, if you recall, in that life, I mean, in that time of my life, I had a gentleman that showed up who was a real Mayan elder, and he told me he was not from here. And he helped me through that phase probably a lot, you know. A matter of fact, strange things happen with him, but he's one of the people that proved to me, you know, he would tell me one thing one day, and then the next day it would come out of someone else's mouth that was totally unrelated to him. You know what I'm saying? That just to show me. And then I'd come back and he goes, hey, did you get my message? Yeah, I did.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly.
That's a
beautiful example of topological thinking and topological communication. You use whatever contour there is in the field in which you're communicating. In other words, if there is someone else there that can get your message across, so be that, and they'll use that one.
Yeah, indeed.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, it's fascinating. In my life, I found that a lot of it comes through, you know, as they say, there is no coincidences, and it comes through synchronicity. And I heard it put a really a pretty good way that, say, one night you have the most lucid dream in it ever, and in that dream you meet the creator or all that is, and you just are flooded with this feeling that everything's going to be okay and you are truly loved. And they give you a flower as a symbol of your meeting and this joyous event that you just had. And then when you wake up in the morning, there's a real rose laying on your chest. Then what? You know, I think the synchronicities grow until there's no point that there's something in communication with you, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And then the real learning starts, I guess.
You bet. And it is fascinating. And the word, the only word I have for something like that is fascinating, because the way in which thoughts or attitudes or, you know, what the complete gamut of experiences we break into words, for them it is completely and wholly communicated in one. In one download, one slow spook, if you will.
It's probably a much better way of communicating, because words just fail, you know, so strong. Matter of fact, I think music, on every one of my CDs, on the back of it, I put, this CD is an attempt to communicate thoughts, feelings, and emotions about our own personal realities that will never be expressed through words.
by the way, they also use sound.
Yeah, I think sounds are much. I think the universe is being sung into existence. You know, everything's vibrating, everything's frequency.
Yes.
And I think that that's another new step that, you know, once we start learning that, you know. Let me ask you this, AR. You're talking about the higher cellular capacitance of the SAM. Is it SAM or SAMI? SAMI is the plural?
No, just SAM.
Okay.
SAM.
With their higher capacitance, let's get into the bloodline, because this is a fascinating subject to me of, you know, why it even exists here, because I don't think people truly understand. I'm starting to get it, but I don't understand it. But let me tell you, I recently was talking with Nicholas Haywood, who is the head of the Priory of Sion, and I got some interesting things, you know, with the whole Da Vinci Code you know, the Priory of Sion being connected to the Templars and them truly keeping the bloodline. Well, I just asked them point blank. I said, is this bloodline you're talking about between Jesus and Mary Magdalene? I said, is this bloodline, first of all, is it the Nephilim? Which, right in the Bible, you know, it says the sons of God found the daughters of man to be beautiful, created this bloodline called the Nephilim. He confirmed that that was accurate. And then I said, well, is this bloodline then that we're talking about, which is the Nephilim, this hybrid bloodline of the Anunnaki or the Sam and the human, does that go all the way back to Samaria into the Anunnaki then? And I said, is that what we're going to learn? And he confirmed that as well, and I thought that was very fascinating. But the fact of the matter is in the bloodline, the same effect is done to the human Nephilim bloodline through the increase of creatine kinase in the bloodstream, which, you know, that's what they found out with the History Channel and the Harvard doctor that, you know, did my blood work. He said that we had these outrageous, unheard of, like the normal human range for creatine kinase is between, it's usually around 25 parts per liter of blood.
Right.
And then as if you have muscle damage, it'll go up to about 250 to 300 tops. You know, and the reason that there's more creatine kinase is it brings oxygen into the bloodstream. And the oxygen in the bloodstream equals how much electrical capacitance you have.
Right.
Well, bloodline members, mine is over 2,100, just 24/7. So the body's being super oxygenated, which in turn means you have more electricity available at a cellular level. And I find that can't be coincidence, because that's exactly what you just said is a characteristic of the SAM themselves. See what I'm saying?
Yes.
Could we get into that subject a little bit?
We can. Let me make you a deal. I need to absent myself for about 5 minutes, and I'll be right back.
Right on.
Gentlemen, can you hear me okay?
Yeah, it sounds like a good commercial break.
All right.
Gentlemen, can you hear me okay? This is Sandra.
Yeah.
Hey, Sandra. Yes.
Okay, wonderful. What we're going to do is go ahead and give you guys just a 5-minute break, and when we come back, we'll pick it up on the other side. You're listening to Otherworld Radio on the Otherworld Radio Network.
I've waited.
I would like, if I may, to take you on a strange journey.
Welcome to Otherworld Radio with Sandra D. Sabatini and Michael Lee Hill.
And we are back on Otherworld Radio on the Otherworld Radio Network. This is Sandra D. Sabatini, and joining me tonight is Michael Lee Hill and A.R. Borden. Gentlemen,
hey,
are you
back
with me? Yes, we are, sir. Yes, we are. Michael, I'm going to turn it right back over to you guys. Go ahead.
All right. Hey, thanks for playing that song, Sandra.
You bet, Mike.
Everything. Well,
how you doing, A.R.?
Pretty good. Pretty good. Feeling much better.
Right on, right on. Well, it's good to be spending my Friday here with you.
Yeah, hey. I'm sorry, but I did have to give up a date, but it was worth it. It was worth it. Just kidding.
Well, super thank you then.
Yeah, hey. Just kidding. Listen, you asked something very important, and it has to do with the markers that you that are causing your ability to produce these things that this doctor found very strange.
Mm-hmm.
And In the last 5 minutes, I was trying to figure out how to answer you in a way that is meaningful to you and does justice to the to how that probably got to be in you as part of you.
That's interesting, because here's something that not a lot of people know, because it wasn't released on the History Channel show. The Harvard doctor, his name's David Systrom, he told me off camera that the only thing he could think of would be some kind of unknown virus. And he said not all viruses are bad, and they can work at the level
right
of DNA. And
right,
he would think it was some kind of unknown virus that was tricking the body into releasing these massive amounts of creatine kinase. That's the only thing he could think of. So that's interesting. That it could be something causing it, you know?
Well, yeah. In fact, I think you just mentioned something very significant. And that is that some of these guys and those who do shall remain nameless are quite capable and are highly knowledgeable, I would say, in using viruses of a specific type, some probably not from here as well, that will induce changes, desirable changes in their subjects, in the people that they want to influence, or whose biology or whose genetics or epigenetics they'd like to influence.
Which interesting.
Is, yeah, yes. And I think we humans today, the scientific community is beginning to look at this very seriously. And hopefully we'll see some things coming out into the scientific journals in the next 5 years. Seriously.
Interesting. Yeah, because I know a lot of doctors know about this. I know, like, a lot of people of the bloodline, they can't have children with others of other bloodlines because, you know, medicine has got to be administered to, you know, not make the mother attack the fetus, you know?
Yeah.
Cause, and it's just kind of brushed over, you know. And so
well,
I think that, you know.
Some of the things, Michael, result in autoimmune reactions. And they are aberrant reactions in that it will endanger or will put the individual at risk.
Hmm.
Individual mother, then, you know, the child.
Yeah.
But, yeah, go ahead.
No, that was it. I just think, you know, it's what you're saying is this is an important subject because it's kind of been brushed under, like, they don't talk about it, you know, that there are different bloodlines here. I think it's a strange subject because I don't, you know, I absolutely know everything that's in existence is all part of the same intelligence. I just know it at a deep level. So there is no, like, separation. I've heard it that the acorn is no less significant than the oak it becomes. It's just all different levels of life, you know.
Yeah.
You know, like you're saying, these are actual medical scientific facts that, you know, I heard that Indians, the whole test of, you know, blood brothers where they'd cut their hands and shake hands is because the blood would coagulate. They would know that that's not of their bloodline, and they knew they couldn't have children, you know. But we just seem to not talk about it, so it's good we're talking about it now.
And, you know, this can be a subject for a whole another two-hour conversation.
Indeed.
There's a lot more to it than meets the eye, and for all of what's even being mentioned and considered in the scientific community today. But, you know, we can reserve maybe for this for another occasion.
Sure, absolutely. I'd love to. We'll do a part two.
Yeah, or three or whatever. You know?
Right on.
I'm game. This is fun, man. I'm having a great time.
I've always enjoyed speaking with you, you know, so this is cool that we can do it in this kind of context and let everyone else share in the joy.
All right.
Hey, let me ask you this, AR. I got a question. So the SAM came to our government and offered them a peaceful transition and contact. What would you think, and obviously we weren't ready back then, and as you said, the meeting even scared the shit out of them. But now I believe we're ready. So what is stopping another official contact from them offering to get through this nonsense that we're going through? And, I mean, if we're going to become a galactic society, let's get on with it, and let's get all these systems that are not for the many. They're for a few banking and oil families' pockets, man. And that, you know, obviously that stuff can't keep going the way it's going. And people are getting hip at the Federal Reserve, what it is, you know. And these, you know, what can we do to facilitate another offer, you know?
Okay. One of the things that I'm not sure that that Dean was completely forthcoming. I'm not going to say that he wasn't completely forthcoming in the sense that what he said was all there was.
Mm-hmm.
But he may have not been either privy to or aware of the extent to which the requirements were set by those representatives of theirs coming down to make contact with and to state basically what their demands or their requirements were going to be. I think that these requirements were taken as demands. And one of the things that, at least what I'm aware of those times, those occasions, and there was more than one occasion, they were proposing the restructuring of just about everything we consider to be government. And a centralization of governance in the sense that we know governance. And what they were doing was more or less pushing the idea of a kingdom, without calling it a kingdom, as they have. And this, of course, was totally and completely unacceptable to the then Eisenhower administration.
Yeah, you can imagine they're coming out of World War II, you know, and their mentality at the time, I'm sure it was like, what? You know, they probably felt that if they just let their guard down, then we'd be invaded or something, you know?
Yeah. And it's what actually happened it's kind of lost in the fog of time. And in the recollections of people that were there or were exposed to that wrote their recollections and their memories of that moment and left that for the record, if you will. And I have a feeling this is what Dean was exposed to without really getting a broader picture.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, he did say in the interview, he goes, "I don't know what they talked about, you know." He said, "I just know they haven't had a meeting." So in his defense, he did say, like, he didn't have privy to that information, as you were saying. But you know what's interesting is Michael Sella has released some information about that meeting, and he said it has come through the pipeline through his own network that they announced themselves as messengers of Inky. That they were Inky's side, and I think that that's really interesting because there just happens to be a crop circle that showed up in Italy, in
right.
You know, that was encoded in binary Ia Inky, which is, you know, Anunnaki.
Now, you have to understand what that means. That doesn't mean the Enki that was here necessarily. It means Enki, Lord Earth.
Right.
Okay, whoever that is, and the message they're bringing a message from the NT. Okay, who is the NT in their from their perspective, from their political lore, if you will?
That's interesting. Yeah, because it was a title.
Yes, it is a title.
Yeah, that's
it is a title. And saying something like that sometimes will obscure things more than they will illuminate. And in this case, we have to be able to look at it from their point of view. What is it that they're trying to tell us? What was it they were trying to tell them at that time? And basically, what they were trying to instill in the representatives that I think, there were two meetings within a few days apart from each other, and that's what I think is what these things were presented, and these requirements, they were not what I heard was requirements, not demands. You see, underlying all of this is a sense of duty to us, but that sense of duty doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to go against their own, what they must have. And what they must have is the ability to be able to come back every time, every 3,600 years, around here, and be able to not get attacked, not be viewed as the enemy, not necessarily expect to enter into a war with us and more than us, because of whatever misunderstanding. Changes in administration here, or changes in policies towards them. And by the way, there are policies towards them now, and they're not just here, not just in this country. They're also, you know, in all major powers have their policies towards them, and because they are one of the players on the board. So, having said that,
you know what I find fascinating? Obviously, if they contacted us back then, and they've been putting up with us shooting at them and stuff for this long, and you know they've not invaded. From what I understand, they said we're not invaders. We want to work peacefully. We're not gonna just come down, you know. And I think that the fact that we're talking right now, if they meant invasion and they wanted to take over, I don't think there's much we could even do about it, you know. Maybe with technology that it's not released to the public, but that probably came from them anyhow, you know.
Okay, one of the things that we need to say in defense of ourselves in for the sake of clarity in our dealings with not just them, anybody else, is that we're going to have to realize that a lot of our projecting of fears and expectations in terms of whether it be an invasion or whether it be some other form of catastrophic or otherwise very undesirable results as a result of, as part of our interactions with them, that's not how things work. And not just them. We're talking about just about every group that is in the solar system. Every group that visits, even the ones that are hungry for for meat, there's still a modicum of, I don't know, civility is probably the word for it, and part of that is agreement, having to develop agreements in order to be able to either justify what they do or work or behave in terms of what that agreement meant to them, not to us, to them.
Hmm.
Okay?
Yeah, this, fascinating.
This is so important for us human beings, and I think Michael Sala
mm-hmm.
understands this. At least either beginning to understand or it has gained considerable understanding of this, is that we need to realize that we have to have their point of view as well. So exopolitics for us is crucial. It is so important. I can't even begin to tell you how important it is. We need to learn. We need to gain intelligence, information, whether it be direct face to face, or any kind of nosive or remote viewing type sourcing. We need information, and we need information not now. Not yesterday. We need it this instant, because right now we're quite literally flying blind, and there are so many versions of reality that everyone really has their own version of understanding of what such and such group says it is and what it does, and the project from there becomes. Well, becomes folklore, becomes a way of seeing and understanding them from our point of view.
Yeah, I understand. It becomes like an archetype, you know, just things are viewed through that lens then.
And, you know, the worst part of this phenomenon that we're experiencing now is that we're developing and evolving policies on the basis of what we understand about them without really having much of an idea as to what they're all about.
Except yeah, I think that their control over, you know, because obviously the powers that be have kept the whole issue of the Anunnaki away from the masses. It's just up until very recently, there was nothing out there.
Correct.
And I think it's being taken out of their hands because these sightings are increasing worldwide over major cities and mass sightings. Sooner or later,
right.
Someone's going to have to explain when it happens all simultaneously over every city, you know. So I don't think that they... I think it's going to be a good future. I know we got a lot of things that come together as a race. And like you said, though, you know, the Anunnaki are really not, you know, of course it's a huge issue because it's going to change everything in the twinkling of an eye. But, you know, Nibiru, as you were saying, and I would like to get into December 21st, 2012, first of all, because I don't think it was such a non-event, to be honest with you. But this gets into some technology that Bob Dean was talking about, and he said that Nibiru actually has what we would consider to be a Dyson shell.
Correct.
An energetic Dyson shell that's put around it that can protect it from, you know, traveling through.
Why do you think we proposed exactly the same thing as a thought experiment?
Well, that's what I was, you know, that's what I wanted to get into, and I didn't know how much we could get into. Because I don't think, you know, according to Bob Dean, he said, obviously, every 3,600 years, it's not a catastrophic transit. It would be evident in our geographic record, and it's not. He said the determining factor is if it comes in between Mars and Jupiter, then
correct,
we got a buffer and we're cool. But if it comes in between Mars and Earth, we're screwed.
Yes.
And all signs and all scientific data and all the, you know, Vatican using their telescope and everything had it coming in between Mars and the Earth.
Yes.
What I understand is something changed. And it wasn't very long ago that it took a change in its course. And even though all scientific data said it was coming in between Mars and Jupiter, I think what's going to come out in the near future is, for some reason, it did come through. It's going to, you know, between Mars and Jupiter. And perhaps this Dyson Shield idea that was put around there, obviously they're here as well. And I'm not so sure that, you know, like this thought experiment with trying to do something similar on the Earth, I think it might have been very successful. I'll just leave it at that. But I was thinking about it, because if Nibiru then came through Mars and Jupiter, it would only be a small pinprick of light in the sky, you know? If it came between Mars and us, man, it would be huge. So I don't know. I'm just throwing some ideas out there that maybe this wasn't. We're living in grace. I get the feeling that, you know,
yeah,
we're in a new timeline.
Well, I'm not really at liberty to discuss that subject in whole, but I'll tell you this: there was a lot of effort. Not just by groups in this country, but worldwide, that were geared towards making or helping assist in making this slight change, as you call it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think that's a fascinating, you know, I think people will rejoice when they find out that, you know, there's been people trying to help and putting a lot of time and effort behind the scenes trying to help humankind. I think that's a good thing to leave from this interview for the masses, you know?
Yeah. Yes.
Maybe
it is incredible the amount of motive force, force that can create motion and can make change that we humans have. And it's, see, I'm not really sure that this has been said before. One of the advantages we have as human beings, as a race on Earth, is numbers. And there is something that we've been finding out and verifying in various different and sundry ways, that it more or less requires 3% or so of the total population to be able to entrain a growing number of people beyond that basic, the basis of that 3%. So let's say, for example, if something like this ever happened again, and or something was coming our way that we become aware of with about a month's notice, mobilizing the 3% would seem like a huge, huge undertaking. 3% of 6.7 billion individuals. What is that? What's 3% of that?
It's a lot.
A little over 225 million men and women and children in the world. But see, does it require all 25 plus million people to be trained, to be cognizant and aware and conscious of this desire? Not necessarily. But what is required is for someone or some people to know precisely what needs to be done so that the rest can become energetic assists, lending their energies to what has to be done in order to avoid whatever negative results or whatever catastrophe, whatever it is that we don't want to happen. And believe me, that can be done. That can be done.
Yeah,
and
I believe it's so. You know, I think there needs to be a platform, and I think the event temples of the Wingmakers group is a great example of that, of having some type of vehicle, of a place where people can go and meet and combine their intention for, I think there's so much power there, and the heart math people.
That is already set up.
Yeah. I think that, know, in instances like that, maybe some, everyone have a way to get together. I think the social media thing can help out with that as well. I don't think gaining those kind of numbers when people truly realize what's happening and that there's guidance. These are cosmic things, cosmic physics.
I know someone real close to us here that visited that platform. You want to ask her about it?
Yeah. We're talking about Sandra, correct?
Yeah, Sandy. Sandra.
Yes, sir, I'm here. Yes, sir, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Yeah.
You're on the spot.
What would you like to know?
We're talking about the platform that exists that now that people can hop to and be a part of in order to contribute their energies to whatever it is that needs to be done that can be focused from and through this platform that you visited once or twice or three times?
A couple of times. Yes, sir.
Can you talk about that?
Well, this platform is between space and time. It's a platform of your own creation. And it is essentially a platform of your heart. That's what I call it.
Uh-huh.
And you can go there at any time. It's already within you. Everything that you need is already within yourself.
Uh-huh.
And contribute to coherence around the world. And it's very possible, like Dr. Borden said, to make a difference. And if we all come together towards a common goal and raise that coherence, some amazing things can happen. The power of the human heart is amazing, and it's very underestimated.
Did you meet anyone who did that?
Yes, sir, I did.
Okay. In other words, it is possible to become aware of others who are there while you're there?
I will say that there were others that were there that are not local.
Okay.
That watch over this process and monitor this process for humankind.
Yep. Okay. Thank you.
That sounds like we're in good hands.
Yeah, and I actually again, let's not deify this by saying okay they're watching over us. No, they're not. That's not their job. Their job is to be able to whatever it is that is needed provide. They won't do it for us. We have to do it ourselves.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Taking personal responsibility.
Not only that. Anything that is that we get, we earned in the universe. Quite literally. Nothing is really issued simply because gee, we're humans and we are just emerging and this and that. No. We are responsible, quite responsible for what we develop, what we make, what we do, and what we create.
Indeed.
Take responsibility, you know, for the energy you bring into a space, I believe.
And the future that we all can create.
Yes, indeed.
I'd like to emphasize that.
Yeah, I think the 3% thing you were talking about, AR, is really fascinating because that goes in well with the 100th monkey.
Yeah.
You know, that once it doesn't take too many people thinking or that have cracked some kind of problem before it spreads throughout the mass consciousness. Maybe that's something that people need to realize, that we do belong to a mass consciousness, you know?
Yeah.
It doesn't take too many people before we can change the world.
One heart
indeed.
At a time, Michael.
Indeed.
One heart
time.
At a time.
Indeed. So where else would you like to take this conversation?
20 minutes left on the clock, gentlemen.
All right.
Hey, Sandra, is there anything you want to hit?
I am actually blown away by what was released tonight. And
yes,
I think that
something.
The listeners around the world just got an earful. And I'm shocked myself, I'll tell you. It's time for this information to come forward. And I really do appreciate it, sir, that you're releasing this information tonight.
Let's talk about one more thing, because there has to be some not closure isn't possible, but some awareness of what it all means, in some sort of a perspective to be placed upon this phenomenon. And people have, and I also know that in the popular literature as well as on the internet, this is regarded as the quarantine. And in my group, we've spent quite a bit of time discussing this so-called quarantine. And it is, and it isn't a quarantine. It is, of course, enforced by means available to humans. And we're not going to get into that one because I'd still like to live in the world. this is important to understand. The way in which things are organized, we are auto protecting ourselves, self protecting ourselves, as well as cooperating with those who would like to keep things on an even keel so that this humankind that is on Earth at least has a chance, not a chance, has a say in its own evolution, in its own evolution, and that what this was designed to do was to buy time so that awareness can be increased in this world. With awareness on their part of what we are gaining and becoming aware of, perhaps they're also being guidance on several of their parts, not just one. This is one of the things that we got in the meetings that we called the links, and it was very clear.
AR, can you explain to the audience what the Link Conference is so they know what you're talking about?
The Link Conference was a meeting, and it's a meeting that takes place once a year, and it can last anywhere between a week to a month, and it can take place anywhere in the world, sometimes on a platform, up in space.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's fascinating. That's got to be unbelievable for you. What was the first one like when you went to the first meeting? Was it overwhelming?
Mind blowing.
I bet.
Yeah, mind blowing. But I got over it very quickly. I had to.
Yeah, yeah. What are you gonna do? It's happening in the moment, you know.
Well, yeah, because you're looking at all these people, and you're thinking, what in the world am I doing here? For what? And yet, at the same time, you wake up right then and there, and you start seeing these other life forms. It's actually not that much different than you. And it's like a eureka moment. And they know. They know exactly what you're going through. And it's almost like there's a gentle assist as you move through all of all the emotions, all of the images, and all of the fears. Because, yeah, I was afraid. Oh, yeah, I was afraid, but I got over it. And then I realized, why am I being afraid? Is anybody here that is trying to hurt me? No. This was not a confrontational situation, but the contrary.
Well, I think it's quite understandable, though, that, you know, sometimes I think we're just so programmed for fight and flight to kick in, you know. And that's probably one of the most jarring situations that I could even imagine, you know. But you've been going to these for 20 years now, correct?
Well, let's see, would be about 16 years.
Wow, man, that's and let me ask you this. I heard that there's talk about the next Link conference being opened up to the masses.
That's one. I'm not quite ready to talk about that, but yeah, there is effort in that direction.
Mm.
And this is something that we and others have kind of been lobbying for, because it is, at least we believe, it's time. And it's something that needs to happen, because the broadening of perspective about humankind and about what others are, you know, live human beings in front of you,
mm-hmm.
what these people are like, that they can also have a measure of and be able to connect through them with all of their ancestors and all of the people, all of the ones that are coming after them. You see, connectivity for them is across time, across everything, future to past, including the person that is exactly in front of them at the time.
Wow.
And that is one of the most disconcerting experiences at first. And it's, you know, it still is. Even to this day, anytime I run into any one of them that connect in that way, it is very disconcerting, because you kind of wonder, what else are they going to find out about me that I don't know about?
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Mm.
You know, it's funny. But they are very willing to share with you, tell you what they know, what they find out. At least with me. I don't know about others.
Hmm.
It could also be that I ask, I point blank say, hey, share with, tell me, feed information. And it's really about information. And then, you know, soon enough, in order to connect with them, you find out how their basic sensorial algorithms work. And you're able to connect with them in the very same way that they are able to connect with you, because they're able to read your fundamental sensorial algorithms, that, you know, the way in which we convert signal into information that the brain can make sense of. And, you know, really, it doesn't take that much, because we do it almost damn near automatically between ourselves. And yet, we don't, you know, we call that intuition. We call that, it goes by under a variety of different names. There's all, it's all the same process. Well, they do the same thing. You know, and they do it, only they do it, from our perspective, better. And so, you know, we can catch up and call it for what it is and use it. There's nothing wrong with that.
I look forward to being able to just have an open roundtable, you know, meeting with these beings. Being a musician, I often wonder what it's going to be like to listen to another culture's music or hear what they've learned, you know, or be able to talk to them. It's so exciting to me, and I think all these things are so right in the near future for humanity, and it just fills me with hope, and
yep.
I look forward to it.
Try this one, Michael. Ask them to do this with you. Bring a guitar with you and begin to play. Play something soft and let them play with you. Meaning, let them play your guitar through you.
Ah, yes, I know that practice well, AR. The more unconscious and out of my own way and just being an instrument for a higher intelligence to come through me, it's almost like if I'm not out of my head, I'm not playing music, really. You know, it has to be from that state of stillness. And then, absolutely, I feel all kinds of... As I was saying, I think music for me is like my best form of communication because words fail me. And music, it's, I think really it's like creating crop circles out of air pressure. You know what I mean? Like no one has really seen, now we're starting to understand that frequency creates geometry. And so what chord makes a triangle, you know?
That, Michael, translate that into light bulbs. What do they call them? Nowadays, bloats, or what is it? These little things that seem to float around and follow you, or what are they called?
Oh, the tiny orb things?
Orbs. Yeah. Hey.
There's a subject. What are they? We're talking about the small ones, correct?
Try converting these notes, these emotions, these feelings, these perspectives into light. And then let that light orb, okay, that accumulation of light, gain its own life and let it go and look, observe, feel, communicate, be print, get print. Anywhere and everywhere, everywhere it goes. What are they used for? Basically, communication means. And I don't necessarily mean verbal communication. But if you tune into one of them, watch what happens.
That's fascinating.
That's what happens.
Yeah, they seem to be around in a lot of photos, you know.
Yeah. I know a girl in Wisconsin. I told her once, why don't you love one of these things? Why don't you make love to one of these things? She says, make love to one of these things. I said, yeah. I'm not talking about physically. I'm talking about emotionally, with your heart, with your mind and your heart together. And she is now covered. Her house is full. In fact, we have some photos of hers and in her house in the backyard she lives in the forest near where she lives.
Wow, that's fascinating.
Yeah,
that's these whatever these life forms are. I've heard with subtle energy that some of the older pyramidal structures, they're just alive with this orb phenomenon, and then some of the newer ones that probably they didn't know where to build them. They're not on energy nodes are they're dead. There's no of this orb activity. And also, like you said, I've heard that they're very attracted to good feelings, and it's usually like music. If people are playing music outdoors and you snap pictures, there'll be orbs everywhere because they dig the vibration of happiness.
Keep one thing in mind in talking about orbs. They seem to require the presence of and the participation of an observer, someone who can perform manifest production of observership, somebody who has a point of view, someone who has a vectored intention, someone who is capable of interconnecting, and not just interfacing, or not just interacting, but also interfacing, connecting on purpose. And these then, you know, imagine a woman or a man sending an orb to her intended a week before the wedding is, just to say, hi, I love you, or just to, you know, check on her, or check on him. And all of these things are not only possible, can be learned. How's that?
It's awesome. So it's almost like viewing these the orb phenomenon as like if you wish someone well, or you send healing energy, it's the orb that is actually the multidimensional communicator of that energy to who you're focusing it. Is that what am I getting that correctly?
Yes, correctly. And what it is it's considered, look at it as a platform for whatever it is you want to send. Now, you can also send some very disturbing energy in the same way.
Yeah, we're going to go the other way.
Of course. What I'm trying to tell you is that this is one soft technology that can be used in any way you want. It really depends on the user, the person that is sending it, that is causing it.
Interesting.
Looks like we're coming to a close, huh? What time is it?
Yeah, we are running to the end of the show. We got 9 minutes left.
Okay.
5 minutes, guys.
All right.
Well, I'll tell you what. This has been an absolute pleasure, and it was just as cool as I thought it was going to be, and I hope everyone out there, I'm just blown away by what you've revealed here today, AR. And this will be the first of many that we can start having these talks in an open fashion like this. And
sure.
Awesome.
Hey, James, let me know.
Right on.
By the way, this is, you know, we're just scratching the surface.
Yeah.
There's more. There's a lot more. And
well, definitely we'll do another show on the bloodline issue. That would be a great thing to get into. And we'll talk about it. I think that, you know, like you said, there's so many other things that, you know, I look at this as it's truly holographic. It's like if you get into one bit of this, you're going to get led to another bit, you know.
Yeah.
And each one of those bits could probably take up hours of time. So I look forward to delving into some of these issues further with you in the future.
All right. Super.
Well, gentlemen, this has been a very revealing conversation on many, many levels, and I would invite our listeners to go back through this broadcast after tonight. We're going to provide it absolutely for free at www.otherworldradio.com and really, really listen to the information revealed tonight within this interview. It's absolutely amazing. There's a lot of disclosure that was revealed in this interview tonight. Michael,
you know what
thank
I would love
so
to
much.
Get into with AR in the future is what he was going to reveal at the Pythagoras conference. You know, I think
that
would be a great
show right there, Mike.
Right on.
All right, guys, it's
all
been
right.
A blast. Thank you to all of our listeners around the world tonight. This is Sandra Sabatini, Michael Lee Hill, and A.R. Borden wishing you a good night wherever you may be. Good night, everyone.
Peace.
Good night.
We'll be right back.